I'd like now to welcome to the Radio Cafe Dr. Arup Mangalik. He is a physician at the University of New Mexico Cancer Center, and he will be at Collected Works Bookstore this Sunday, the 17th of June at 11 in the morning, in a conversation called My Life, My Death, My Choice, Doctors Push for Death with Dignity. He'll be there with Dr. Catherine Morris in conversation with attorney Peter White. Welcome to the Radio Cafe.
Thank you.
So you are speaking not as a member of the University of New Mexico Cancer Center, but as an individual, as a doctor working for so many years with dying patients. Why have you come to support this Death with Dignity movement? First of all, what is this movement, and why have you come to support it?
The movement is geared towards allowing patients who are suffering from a terminal illness and who do not have any option in regard to controlling their disease. It has been established through their physician that they have a terminal illness and are not likely to survive for more than 6 months. If such a patient feels that they would like to have their death at a time of their choosing rather than suffering through the whole period, we are requesting that this be made a legal process. And the way it is proceeding is that the current law in New Mexico states that assisting somebody to commit suicide is a felony. What we are requesting the courts in New Mexico to clarify is that such a law should not apply to a physician who prescribes a lethal dose of a drug to a patient who is mentally competent and is terminally ill. And that it would be, if the patient requests that, the prescription can be given without fear of prosecution. It is up to the patient to request the drug. It is for the patient to fill the prescription, and it is for the patient to take the prescription. And it is up to the physician to prescribe it. No physician is being obligated to give the prescription if they don't feel comfortable with that.
You have worked as an oncologist at the University of New Mexico Cancer Center. You must have seen just terribly painful end-of-life situations. What does that look like to you? I mean, is it just horrible suffering, the end of a person's consciousness, and they just want to leave? I mean, what does it look like?
Yeah, that is the problem which we face with not all patients, with some patients. Many patients with the normal doses of pain medication or other problem which they may have, we can control those symptoms with medications or other measures. But in some patients, those measures are not effective. And in order to relieve those patients of their suffering, we are requesting for this clarification of the law.
So the New Mexico law makes it a felony for a doctor to prescribe a lethal dose of medication that the patient wants?
No, the New Mexico law just states that it is illegal and a felony to assist somebody in committing suicide. So we are saying that we feel that that provision of the law, that general statement in the law, should not apply to a physician who prescribes the lethal dose in these circumstances.
To what extent, I was wondering this, do patients, for example, who know that their time has come and they would like to leave their very suffering bodies, to what extent do they just take it upon themselves, for example, to get a sleeping pill prescription and then overdose on it?
That is something which is being done, but it is done surreptitiously. For the patient, say the patient asks for a sleeping pill or a pain pill, and then stores the pain pills and takes them all at one time. And that is what some patients do. But we are hoping that rather than the patient feeling guilty and doing something which is surreptitious, they do it openly and with full understanding. And that is the big difference. And I may extend this to another point that very often we do use a procedure which is not really a procedure but a method which we often call palliative sedation or terminal sedation, in which we say that we will give you enough pain medication that you go into a coma as a result of the pain medication. So we are, again, trying to do like a double-faced statement. We don't say it is to kill you, but de facto, that also will kill the patient. And we feel that it should be done openly and without any guilt or feeling of doing something underhand.
You are from India.
Correct.
How are these issues handled, or how were they handled when you were a young person? Somebody was suffering, they were at the end of their lives. What did they do?
In the traditional Indian culture, and in Indian society, and I practiced medicine in India for about 15 years before I came to the U.S. There, the family was more accepting, and morphine and other drugs were available more easily than they are in this country. So many patients did take an overdose and ended their life in that fashion. But ironically, as more and more Western medicine has come into India, there are more. I could go back to India regularly, and I hear more and more stories of patients and doctors both coming away from that and trying to do treatments at the end of life, which everyone appreciates and recognizes would not be helpful in terms of controlling their disease. But we keep many more than before, many doctors are now using those kinds of treatments. And the openness with which patients allowed themselves to die or kill themselves is getting less frequent.
We're talking to Dr. Arup Mangalik. When there are cases where somebody is in a state of either in a coma or in a state where they can't make choices for themselves anymore because they're hooked up to machines or respirators or things like that, what are the choices that the patient or the patient's family has at that point? Is this part of the conversation that you're engaged in right now in terms of dying with dignity?
That is a separate situation, because we are confining this current initiative, we are restricting it to patients who are fully competent, fully capable of expressing themselves, but have a terminal illness. Once the patient gets to a situation when they are hooked up to machines and things of that type, then this particular initiative would not work. I have, over the last 15 years or so, tried to increase the consciousness of the public and the medical profession to be more clear about the situation of, patient being on a machine, and say, hey, we should not put this patient on a machine in the first place, or stop the use of the respirators and so on once the once it is clear that the treatment that we are using is not going to work. But that becomes a little more complicated because there are multiple people involved and multiple, the situation is very complex. Here we are looking at a very clear situation of a competent patient with a terminal illness, and but the patient is very capable of expressing themselves at this time.
We're talking to Dr. Arup Mangalik. How do your doctor and nurse colleagues feel about this issue? Do they feel the way that you do, by and large, or is there a lot of division about that?
I have not conducted a formal survey, but I will explain this a little bit. I sent out to the community in the Health Sciences Center expressing my opinions. And I got back approximately 50 responses, all of which were positive. There were two responses where the person recognized the importance of this initiative, but felt that from their belief systems, they could not support it because they felt that the intent to kill was not acceptable to them. They were comfortable with the current situation of giving an overdose, but not with the intent of killing. I have not had anybody actively state that I'm trying to kill people unnecessarily.
Does that tend to be grounded in religious belief or an innate moral sense or what?
I know, because they said so. Both these people felt that their religious belief did not allow them to give the dose with the intent of killing. They were comfortable with the intent of relieving pain, and in the process, the patient dying. And that's a distinction which was very important to them. And to me, the intent of killing versus the side effect of dying are pretty much the same. I feel that if the patient needs that, we should go ahead and do it openly. And that is the distinction.
Have you observed what's happening in Oregon? In other words, that's a place where they've passed a death with dignity law, and every year maybe 100 people make use of that. What do you get back from that state? How's that going as a policy?
As a policy, I have heard many statements, and my assessment is that it is a very positively, the whole initiative is looked at positively. Initially, of course, there were some objections, but now don't seem to be any objections because people have realized that this is between the patient and the physician, and in fact, in Oregon, they have to have two physicians meet the patient twice. But either way, they have realized that nobody is being forced into this in any way, and therefore, it has been accepted. And actually, Washington State also has passed a similar law.
This sounds crazy, but I have, for years, being a dog owner, been struck by what seems to me like the superiority of veterinary care over human care. You can walk into a clinic and get care same day. You can get diagnostics and treatment that are excellent. You can get doctors who are cooperating with each other. And at the end of an animal's life, the doctor and the pet owner can make that decision to put the animal out of its suffering. And nobody seems to object to that. Why the double standard? Do we not see ourselves as animals like everybody else really is?
That is something which I also have a very hard time understanding, because I have seen patients' families insisting on treatments, especially when the patient is unable to speak. and they see the patient is suffering. They are informed by the physicians clearly that there is no treatment that is going to work. But for some reason, and I do not understand that, for some reason the family insists on doing what is, you know, commonly used the phrase, everything. And what I say is, why not do everything to make the patient comfortable?
Right.
But somehow that does not, there are certain groups of people for whom this reality does not agree. They don't agree with this reality.
And there seems in that attitude to be a denial of the inevitability of death and an unwillingness to let go when somebody is at the end of their life.
That is correct. There, you know, some people make the comment that Americans think death is optional, which is a very crude way of putting it, but that's what it seems like in some situations. And some situations are tragic. You know, if you have a healthy young person who very rapidly gets into a bad situation for whatever reason and is dying, people want to do everything they can to keep that person alive. And they lose sight track of the reality that nothing can be done for situations. Other things which have been stated, which I personally have not seen, is that certain religious groups and certain ethnic groups feel that they are being discriminated against, and therefore the doctors are not giving them the treatment. So it is those kinds of phenomena that, or perceptions, I should say, which lead to this tragedy of patients suffering rather than being with their family and holding hands and, you know, being comfortable when they are dying.
Now, there's another factor, an economic factor, namely that often a very large amount of a patient's lifetime medical costs get spent in the last couple of weeks of their life.
That is correct.
And some of this is just the kind of thing you're talking about. It's basically putting off the inevitable and prolonging suffering. Do you think that economics is or should be a part of this conversation?
Yes, it should. But currently, economics is that patients think that because they have insurance and or Medicare or something of that type, that they will not have, the family particularly, that they, because they have coverage, they will not have any payments to make. Reality, unfortunately, is that there are co-payments, and many a family is stuck with a very large bill because they did not think the whole problem issue through. There is again, in the group which is opposed to comfort at death, they have this perception that doctors would not treat a patient because it will cost the hospital money. The reality is that regardless of whether you have insurance or not, the hospitals will treat, and through various kinds of coverage, indigent care, even if you don't have insurance, the hospital gets paid. So the doctors actually make money when the patients are treated heavily at the end of their life. It is the patient who suffers both in terms of physical problems and also suffers financially.
Having seen what you have seen, do you know what kind of choices you would make for yourself at the end of your life?
Yeah, I have discussed this with my friends, my son, who's my heir, and he lives in a different town. So, I mean, I've also discussed it with my friends in Albuquerque and my colleagues, and everybody knows that I would not like to be kept on a machine if it was, even if it was a short-term procedure to tide me over a crisis. That's different, but not to keep me alive if I have a serious terminal illness, then be with me, hold my hand, talk to me, and let me die. They all understand that. Can I tell a joke here?
Yes.
One time I was in a meeting with, in a discussion meeting with my colleagues, and I got a coughing spell. And all the people around me started shouting, hospice, hospice. So people know my wishes.
Dr. Arup Mangalik is a physician at the University of New Mexico Cancer Center. Thank you so much for being with us on the Radio Cafe.
Thank you.
And once again, Dr. Mangalik will be at Collected Works Bookstore on Sunday morning, June 17th at 11 o'clock. In a discussion titled My Life, My Death, My Choice, Doctors Push for Death with Dignity. And that will be along with Dr. Catherine Morris in conversation with attorney Peter White. For more information, you can call Collected Works Bookstore at 988-4226.